Well, she was rattling around in this house of 10 rooms by herself, and she would like to have someone come in, rent rooms to people, but she was mighty careful who she got in. And all of a sudden they thought of Fannie Smith's kindergarten students who had come from out of town a long ways, and she rented out every single one of her rooms to Fannie Smith's students that were training for teachers. My goodness, they became our lifelong friends. And one is Gertrude Kearns. Gertrude Caswell Kearns lives right over here on Birch Drive in Fairfield. I think she's 95 years old or around there. And she's reminding me how wonderful my mother and father were to her when she was a homesick girl and she couldn't go home for holidays. And so my parents would have her in for Christmas and Thanksgiving and all that. And her daughter Muriel is a well-known trained nurse, but she is retired now. So, and so I went to that kindergarten, and I was so skinny that my doctor wanted me to come home at recess time, which was about three or four doors away, you know, and drink a glass of milk. So I did. So that later, when she left there with her school, that became the Christian Science Church. And that was... Well, first there is the professional building down there. And then I think maybe there was one building in between, but it was right there near State Street on Lafayette that Fannie Smith's famous kindergarten school was. Let's see. Oh, and in those days also, I have to tell you about the cars. Oh, they didn't have any way, no antifreeze or anything like that. So my father had to put away the car all winter long, jacked it up on jacks, and he didn't get that car out until Good Friday. That was the first time we all went for a ride on Good Friday, and you might know it rained. Every Good Friday it rained. Never failed. And in those days you had to put these Formica curtains on. You pushed a button, went through an eyelet, and you twisted it, and you had these curtains all around the car. And one time he took it to Cape Cod. And I was just about 6 years old or something like that, and he thought I was too young to go, but my mother thought I ought to go. So I went, and coming home, they didn't have tires or anything like they do nowadays. I don't know how many flat tires he had, but I think it was five. And he finally gave up. They had patches with him. He had to put on patches. And it was a lot of work to take the wheel off, put on this patch. And of course it was dark, and I got to fooling around, throwing stones, as kids do, you know, and whango, it went right into the red light in back so that nobody could see us ahead who was in back of us. I thought they did something kind of stupid. They took my red sweater and hung it on the back. It should have been something white. I don't think you can see red at night. I think it should have been white. But anyway, my father finally got disgusted and he left the car and we took the train home. I can remember putting my head down on my mother's lap and slept all the way home on the train. I think we got in about 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, where the car was when he left it, I don't know. I don't know how he retrieved it again. It's not still there. Oh dear. And then the downtown stores. Maybe other people remember, lots of other people maybe remember this. Reed's used to be on the corner of Fairfield and Main Street and Fairfield Avenue. And they used to have wires high, high up over your head. And when you paid a bill, or if it was a charge, you know, you'd have to get a paper back when they tore it off, your receipt, or your change, money, whatever it was. They'd put it in this little cable car, which was about this big. Give it a shove and zip, it would go round and round and round high up into an office where somebody was sitting, where they made the change or gave you back your slip. And then they would send this car back, and many is the time we had to wait for those cars to come back, those little things, oh, I don't know, maybe they were 7 inches by three or something like that. And then there was a big tube with a flap on the end. And you had to wait and wait sometimes because they didn't have enough girls, I guess, for this little cable car to come back. And the clerk used to take that flap to the thing and push it up in the air and down and up and down and up and down. It would make a noise, like a lot of air coming out of it, like that, you know. Because she thought maybe it was stuck in there or something. So we had to wait a while for our change in those days. Oh, dear. Wonder if I've covered everything that I have down here or not. Oh, and the door-to-door beggars, my goodness. They were a dime a dozen. They used to be ringing the bell all the time. Could I have a sandwich? Well, it was up to the maid. Sometimes she would give them a sandwich and sometimes she wouldn't. But they'd make a cross on the sidewalk or something like that to tell the other beggars, you can get fed here. Well, I told you about the horse ambulance that Mrs. Muirhead said, didn't I, that she lived on Central Avenue and they had one horse ambulance and you used to go out, clatter, clatter, up to Bridgeport Hospital. And she said, now this is something I don't understand. She said that apparently oranges were an antidote for poisoning, something like that, because she said they always used to throw orange peels out of this horse-drawn ambulance. Throw them right out on the road. And she said we kids would sometimes follow up with bicycles just to pick up the orange peelings. I don't know what fun there was in that. I never heard of it. Oh, there used to be a fellow that went by on it was an open wagon, one horse, kind of bedraggled with his head down, bored to death, you know. Cash, paper, rags. And he'd sing it out that way. Cash, paper, rags. Oh, it was just such an ordinary thing that it was part of the day, practically every day. And then Mrs. Muirhead also remembers a horse radish man who came around every single spring in a wooden tub and he had horse radishes. I don't know what that was about, I'm sure. I can't remember much.
I did have one other thing I wanted to ask you. I want to know, you know, what you were employed doing through the years.
I was assistant industrial secretary of the YWCA until I got married, and the building was where the fire department is now. This is the building that I went to. It wasn't in the center of the city. Had a huge, great, big auditorium, gymnasium, with a platform to it, you know, a stage. And so I used to try to keep the industrial girls happy, those who were working in the factories and didn't have anything to do when they got finished, and they were living in the city. And there was another girl working there with me, and we took them up to Putney to some site where there were either cottages or tents, I've forgotten which, for a weekend. And we'd have fun and games up there. And then I did anything that I could think up with them, whatever they wanted. We put on a play one time, and we put on a dance, and we could go roller skating because it was a huge gymnasium. And we had classes and different things like that. And then I got married and quit and lived in Trumbull the rest of the time. So about 30 years I have not lived in Bridgeport, so don't be too hard on me because I was in Trumbull while I raised my family, Trumbull and Nichols, until 30 years ago.
One other thing I wanted to ask you is what you did while you were in Bridgeport after, you know, with your free time, that sort of thing.
Well, we used to go around and visit each other an awful lot. On John Street, I had a very close friend, Helen Whitehead. She married a McIntyre. And then Millie McIntyre lived in the north end of Bridgeport, and we used to get on trolleys and go around and visit each other. And then we used to go to the beach together. We had lots of beach parties. And I don't know, we were kept busy. I was made to do a certain amount of housework, which kids aren't now unless they have large families. And I wasn't allowed to go out to do anything unless I had cleaned my room, made my bed, and make sure, I will ask your mother if you've taken care of what you're supposed to take care of. And I had to study. In fact, I was a grind. I'm really ashamed of the fact that I was a grind, but I was that dumb. And I had to do an awful lot of studying. So my time was taken up. I always had something to do. Then the church activities were a lot too. They did a lot of things for the young people in groups.
Can you remember any big events that have happened over the years while you were in Bridgeport? Major things?
No. I'll think after you've gone. But I can't think. Bridgeport seems to go along just about so, except for all the shopping plazas that have taken away from the center, so there's nothing in the center anymore. They did used to have a Richard Peck boat that left from Bridgeport down to New York, and what they ever stopped that for, I don't know. It was such a pleasant run to go to New York on a ferry and back. But that didn't last, and one of the activities we had in the summer, we'd go over any number of times to Port Jefferson on the Port Jeff ferry. A bunch of us gals would get together. I don't know, we had events planned for all the time. What do you think? Well, I guess I'm talked out.
All right, well, thank you very much. I can't think of any more questions.
Well, was I any good to you at all?
You've been great help. I really appreciate that.
I told you that all I could furnish was local color, that the facts, my facts aren't too good.
That's okay. Okay, I'll stop the tape here.